Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to our last session in the day, where we're going to talk about metrics and analytics for Web 2.0. I know it has been a long day for you, but I think it actually might be quite interesting to consider what can we measure in Web 2.0? What should we measure in Web 2.0? How do we actually want to evaluate what we're doing in Web 2.0? Now, here's the outline of the next 50 minutes. I will talk for about 30, 35 minutes. I'll start a little bit with the history, coming from print, then talking about pages, which is sort of Web 1.0, about people, which is Web 2.0, and then about interactions between people, which is, I think, a very important element. Then I talk about attention gestures and how attention gestures we have. To forward something, to mark something, to save something, to notify somebody about something, to create a survey of something. How attention gestures actually are the building blocks of metrics for a web tool. And then I return to the question, actually, why do we do the whole thing? Basically, two answers. One is because we want to sell ads, and just like when you filled out for the Web 2 Expo, your profile. Pages and pages of how many people does your company have, what is your average income, et cetera. That's one way to try to gather some more demographics in order to be able to sell ads. And the second one is to come up with other actions. I then talk about some of the difficulties, and there specifically, I'm going to see the trade-off that in some ways there is a decentralization on the web. For instance, me putting somebody's widget on Vigen.com. And there's also some element of centralization, for instance, on NetVibes or on Flickr or at iGoogle, putting up stuff together in one site. After a brief discussion and some suggestions for metrics, I'll turn to Christian Sauer, who is the CEO of WebTrack.com, a company here in Berlin which does measurement on websites. And then, as a special guest at the end for the last 5 minutes, we'll have Sami Yagan, who went to Stanford Business School and has a company called OkCupid, which is a super successful company where people, as you can imagine, sort of start to date each other, but they contribute very Web 2.0. They contribute surveys for each other. No, not just the standard survey you all know from Facebook, which actually a friend of mine wrote, but all kinds of surveys. And it says, who is taking the survey right now? Hey, do you want to hit up this person? Stuff like that. By the way, in case you didn't have a chance to hear me before in my previous three talks which I already gave at this conference, my name is Andreas Weigand. I work with a bunch of startups around the world. I live in San Francisco and in Shanghai. And I helped co-organize here some of the sessions in the workshop at the conference. I teach a course at Stanford called Data Mining e-Business. And up to 2004, I was a chief scientist at Amazon.com. By the way, I do welcome any kinds of interruptions. So if you have questions on the way, don't wait to the end. Just go to the microphone and interrupt me, and I would like to sort of build it in. And if I feel it's better dealt with at the end of the talk, I will let you know so. Okay, any questions so far? Okay. So we said, why do you actually want analytics? And there are two main reasons. One is that you want to act. You want to know how can you improve your product. It used to be the medium is the message. Then there were this time of PR agencies carefully crafting messages, and Super Bowl is an example, trying to get those across without listening to the customer. Those days are gone. It is now the product is the message. At OkCupid, it's not the messaging, it is the product. That's why people come for it. And in some way, customer service is the message. If you call up United and you know nothing happens, then that's a very bad message. And that's actually customer service is the new marketing or the absence of new marketing. So, what is the history of those metrics? The history comes from print. Web 1.0 metrics, such as unique users, basically are a straightforward combination of how many copies of Focus do you sell? Of a certain magazine do you sell? That also comes from television, where, for instance, at Super Bowl, how did they measure how many people are watching Super Bowl? Well, they measure how many people flush the toilets during the break. That's the measurement of knowing how many people watch Super Bowl. What is the flux? Because it's a well-defined break across the country. And you measure how many people are using the toilets, more or less than last year. So we don't really measure flushing toilets on the web, but this notion of unique users, funny as it is, 30% of Amazon.com sessions are single hit sessions, are bounces, a person just having a single click. And that should be worth as much as that person who pours out his heart and writes about that book nobody else has written about, making sure that Amazon makes on average 40, 50 bucks from his review. Well, the reason for this is twofold. One, it is history, that we always come from a certain perspective. And two, the audience really had no way in Web 1.0 to just genuinely express itself. So basically, it is not that people were evil people, but it's that people had no way of really measuring the impact on the audience, short of Super Bowl flushing. Okay, so a slight improvement after that funny construct of unique users was that we started counting page views. Why not? And in the early days, like Viking.com is still sort of a web 0.001 page, handwritten HTML. In those days, a page view was not a bad thing. But what's happening is we are not really interested in pages, we're interested in people. So as I sometimes say, Web 1 was about pages, Web 2 is about people. Or Web 1 was about impressions, Web 2 is about the impressed. So how do we get from pages to people? Well, one way of looking at this is that we say we want to look at the time on site. That still, ladies and gentlemen, has the notion of the site behind it. So if I put a Twitter widget of Sam on my page, whose site is it? Sam's site? Twitter's site? Not that easy. But it's understood, it's understandable that people do what they could do, namely trying to estimate the time of site. But as you all know, we live in a world of continuous partial attention. And I bet you that, you know, in that Super Bowl ad, when people go to the bathroom, that fully counts as having attention on the site because they're not doing anything else than carefully reading that ad, right? So you need to do some statistical modeling in order to have some decent estimate. And then say, you know, nice try. It's pretty good, but you need to do better than that by modeling stuff. This company called Cleverset.com has the best statistical models. They primarily use them for targeting products, for product recommendations. For instance, a major, actually the second largest e-tailer in the world, a company based in Hamburg, it reads the same from the front to the end as from the end to the front. I can't tell you much more than that. That company uses them for recommendations. But these models are much more powerful than that because they have so-called hidden nodes. For those of you with a double E background, think hidden Markov models, where you just try to estimate from the observed data what the phonemes in speech recognition are. And those hidden nodes, one of the interpretations you can attribute to those hidden nodes is that it's about how much attention actually somebody is paying. Another interpretation is where that person is in that process of creating and maintaining product space awareness. Okay, that's pretty much the best you can do, at least to the best of my knowledge, if you are only looking at clicks on a given site. Having a holistic view on the data and building really good, solid, statistical, probabilistic models. Now you know Web 2.0, of course, is active. It's no longer the passive user who gets targeted, but it's the active user who contributes. The read-write web. The barriers of contribution, and that's truly one of the beauties for people who believe in democracy, the barriers have shrunk to essentially zero. People don't tend to fill out truthfully long surveys anymore unless they have fun doing it. Like, I mean, honestly, who Who of you really deeply thought about every click you did after registering for the Web2 Expo? So now the question is, in that richer world, what are the ways of user participation, user interaction? And I would like to actually distinguish two ways here. I would like to first talk about interactions with a site. That's still relatively easy to get. And then, relatively harder to get, interaction with other users. So, I give you some examples of what attention gestures we can measure. Well, we can save a page, or let's say a post. We can rate a news post. We can vote an article. We can annotate stuff. There's actually a really cool company out of Singapore called sharedcopy.com, which is a tool which I use to just annotate pages and send them to people. So you have your own little archive, trivially easy to use, zero barrier of entry for using it, which allows us to express our attention. You can circle stuff and just very easily forward it to people. Forwarding, on the other hand, is an example of something which is about other people. Now, if I forward something to Christian, he actually knows that I care, that he reads this. So we learn about both of us. Commenting is a very interesting element, because if I'm commenting on, say, a post Frank Wagner has, and I say, totally agree, and now Frank changes that post, what should happen to my comment? Who owns the comment? Or let's say, Frank doesn't like that site anymore, deletes all his stuff. So I still totally agree, but nobody knows what I agree with. So there are very interesting questions in terms of the ownership of these comments, or of replies. Now, there are many more attention gestures. These are relatively general responses, and I'm thinking here about helping us deal with the problem of information overload in the world of blog posts. And there's a company in Portland, Oregon called Atenza.com, which takes those attention gestures and then measures and models your attention stream compared to others, and based on that, bubbles up that content which it believes it is interested in, you're interested in. So for instance, if Sam, just because he's at the East Coast, tends to get up 3-4 hours before me, and he discovers cool stuff that happened in Europe, and I tend to sort of follow him, then it makes it explicit. And hey, if you suggest something, I actually have this higher in my Atenza rank than something which he hasn't read. So it's again the idea that you collect lots of data, similar to what I explained before with CleverSet, and then you build models on those data which help you understand more what you might be interested in. From our perspective here, what matters is that these are examples or primitives which we can combine to measures of attention, to measures of user engagement. Now, it's a little hard to know what all you can say in generality. For instance, on a site like OkCupid, there are of course very different measures of attention. The measures of attention there are, you know, how much do you participate in creating surveys? How much do you participate in taking surveys? How much do you participate in interacting with other people? What is your average response time in reacting to when other people ask you about something? So, in a talk of this generality, I can give you some of the principles, and I hope that in the question section later, we'll actually come up with some specific sites that some of you might be running, and then we can try together to come up with explicit measures for your sites. Finally, I don't want us to forget that there are surveys. I was a little surprised that I was the first one who ran surveys online at Amazon.com. Just simple surveys like, hey, what do you want to do today? And the power is not in the way, you know, market research does in saying 73% come to Amazon.com because they might be interested in buying a book. But the power is taking those explicitly generated data and then correlating them to the implicit data, namely the click streams. That's how you actually understand what the engagement is. And that actually led to a 8-digit dollar amount, which was the company A9, because we realized that product search and site search was really in bad shape. People say, I'm looking for this book by, say, this Harry Potter, and then they didn't find it. Bad news. Okay. So service is another way of measuring engagement, and the power here is to correlate that to the result. Turns out that, for instance, at Amazon, half of the people who end up buying something didn't come to the site because they wanted to buy something. They say, hey, just want to see what's new, or just to browse, and they end up bringing money to Amazon. That's the good news. The bad news in that case was that a third of the people, only a third of the people who come to the site and say explicitly, I want to buy something, end up buying something. So the point I'm making here is think about very richly the data sources you can think about. I do workshop with companies where the main purpose is just to come up thinking out of the box, what is it for you, for your product you could measure? And don't just think about either mobile, don't just think about the web. Think mobile. For instance, I did a project for Swiss International Airlines where we actively integrated, given that Swiss has the mobile numbers of many of their frequent flyers, miles and more people, that we actively thought, how can we use the mobile to reach people, to poll people, to give people ways to comment stuff, to comment on stuff with basically zero barrier of contribution. Okay. In the next couple of minutes, I want to give you a framework which over the years I have found quite useful and which I think you will also find useful in the conversation we'll have with Christian afterwards. So the framework I have are five levels or five architecture levels. The bottom level is the level of data. Not a trivial one. It means to collect data, you have to think about what you want to collect first. My advice is their storage is so damn cheap now, if you can think about something, collect it. It might be good for something. Now, one of the courses I teach is called data mining. And that term is a term like from the 90s. Because the 90s was about algorithms. It was people being really smart of how they can mine the last bit and byte of information out of data. The 2000s is much more not about data mining, but about data collection. That's why I said before, hey, think about what other data sources could you open up? Location data, relationship data, time data, and all these things, which people just didn't have that backflow, this bidirectional way to deal with data in the 90s. Second, architecture of experimentation. The, you know, well-known, if you will, secret of companies like Amazon.com, like Google, etc., is that they are very, very good in starting with actions. So I sometimes say the primacy of action. You first think, what could I be doing? And then you just code it up and you measure the result. So it's very different from this old belief that you really carefully think and maybe bring some people in and ask them, what do you think about this feature versus that feature? You just do it and you measure what's working. And in order to be successful there, of course, you have to have, and that's the topic of this session here, lots of metrics in place. By the way, don't just think that there is one metric, which is the ultimate metric, which will, you know, be the metric of the company, short of maybe the stock price. Think about it as a whole set, as a battery of metrics, 5, 10, 20 different metrics which you track, and typically you will notice there are lots of trade-offs. So for instance, in the old world, yes, I know how to, for instance, increase the number of visitors, no problem. But chances are, if I give you 10 times as many visitors, that the conversion rate goes down, because it's not the same qualified visitors you have as if we only target very, very carefully those people who we know want to actually be at our site. Experimentation is easy for short-term metrics, hard for long-term metrics. So measures of engagement, you're interested in what's happening to people in the long term. You're not only interested in either going to click on the red button or the green button. Long term is something which I really do invite you to think very deeply about. I've mentioned in the other talk the distinction between a transaction economy and a relationship economy. And that for a number of reasons, partly also because we didn't have a flow of information back. We are pretty stuck in a very unsatisfying transaction economy. You want an airline ticket, you buy that airline ticket and hey, forget about it if you have any questions about it. That agent told you it's upgradable. Who was that agent? You don't know what that agent. You arrive at the gate and say, you are wrong. Okay, you sit in that middle seat. That is a transaction economy. How can we not just have a fake relationship economy? Dear 1K, we love you dearly. Please book more tickets with United Airlines so we can screw you more. No. How do you actually come to a true relationship economy? That is one thing why I do emphasize that long-term metrics are the ones you really want to be interested in. Third level, architectures of interaction. Children's books. Probably most of us grew up with books with nice illustrations. Children's books are dead. Why? Short messages. Belonging. Kids like to write short messages, like to interact with other people. They don't like to, read those dead books and just interact with dead people. Sure, getting their parents to read books for them, that was a decent substitute because basically it was the attention giving them attention, their parents giving them attention. But hey, the attention you have by just sending short message and smiley faces to either kid across the street or maybe to your brother across the room, that beats by far having children's books. So how can we build interaction in? That's another of these levels of or these metrics which we need for Web 2.0. By mistake, actually, I skipped here the architect of participation. Of course, Tim O'Reilly's term, architect of participation means, we all have our blogs. It's like little dots somewhere in the world. But ultimately, that's not what really keeps people going. Hitting up people on dating site or interacting with people, like the kids example, are really what's more important. That's interaction comes after participation. But ultimately, I think the top level here, the fifth level, is really to deeply think about architectures and metrics of collaboration. How do we create a group? How do we create belonging? When I changed planes in Munich, there was a big ad by Sheraton, which had in huge letters the word belonging on it. So I think they're up to something, that in this world here, where it's very easy to self-express yourself, but maybe nobody actually cares for it, in that world, trying to belong to groups, that is a metric which going in this direction, if you have a site which has some group elements to it, is something which I really, really think we should think about deeply. So let's review here. Why do we do what we do? Examples are you want to deal with information overload. You find out of those 80 million blogs which have updates every day, you want to find those 10, 100,000, I don't know how many you read, blog posts which you want to read that day. A beautiful example for dealing with information overload is Flickr's interestingness measure Tom Coates talked about. There are 2 billion of mainly mundane pictures. But if you ever have looked at the top pictures based on Flickr's interestingness, they're just amazing beautiful. The top photographer of a German magazine once told me a couple of years ago at the DLD, the Digital Lifestyle Day, Andreas, when I see this, I get scared. I get scared whether I still have a job. Because using algorithms to extract with the right metrics out of millions of pictures every day, those 10, 20 really, really amazing ones, based on attention gestures. Attention gestures such as people favoriting, people commenting on it, people just clicking on it, people wanting to see the large level. These are all examples of measures of interestingness which allow us to actually pick out some stuff out of a huge universe. Photography has changed from an event-driven, event-based photography to a basically always-on photography. that people always have their camera with them. Yesterday, I was on Kurfürstendamm, the main street here, and I saw ups.com/, can you guess what? Widgets. So we just gave a talk about the widgetization of the work yesterday, widgetization of the world. We take a cab, and there it is, ups.com/widgets. So it is no longer event-driven, a wedding. We did a photographer to the wedding, but it's really aimed in photography. What are the actions? That's something we should have talked about. GetSatisfaction.com is another very interesting company which takes, again, attention gestures of people, combines them, mingles them up, and then goes to the company and says, well, dear airline, this is what your customers say. Do you want to just close your eyes and say, well, you know we are good, or maybe do you want to respond? That is another way you can measure which companies respond. The example I gave earlier today here is Sun Microsystems has on their homepage blogs by bloggers. On their homepage, if you blog something about Sun, Technorati picks it up and syndicates it back to the homepage. Courageous move. Result, extremely positive. Because now the developers, in a very open blogging policy, can respond to what they see. And what do you think happens to those people who say, you know, my Solaris thing, or whatever the operating system is called, sucks? Whoa, they say, if actually they respond to this and they can fix that, I have another idea what they could be doing. So suddenly you turn somebody who's basically negative in this old framework of your customer is your enemy to your customer actually your friend. You can do something for them. You can actually make them happy. These are sort of the metrics, I think, the analytics of Web 2.0 to try to get to that. Not easy. And if you have a product that sucks, maybe you don't want it. But if you have a product, which I hope all of you do have, which is somewhat good, you do want that. That's where this wonderful saying, customer service is a new marketing, comes from. No longer that Super Bowl ad. User-generated products, we all got from this company called Spreadshirt.com. Lukasz actually is here. Our conference t-shirts, Zazzle. There are wonderful ways of seeing how engaged users are, because you can take some design, you can design something else. These are very rich metrics of interaction. You can then, of course, put it out in your marketplace. You can see how do other people interact with it. Mashups, all of those things you know about here are examples. Taste, situation, video, music, where do you click out of the movie? Where do you actually click out of a song? Where do you skip stuff? Rich set, rich set, rich set. So what are the difficulties? I'd give you many examples, hopefully, which allow you to think about stuff. What are the difficulties? Sometimes people say, oh, Amazon.com, that was the good olden days where actually we knew what people were doing because it was central at Amazon.com website. We did measure interesting things. For instance, in the recommendations, we measured, partly because I thought it was an interesting thing to measure, not only the item people are clicking on, but what are the other items they are not clicking on? Or the gold box, some of you might remember who live in the United States, where actually one idea was to just have one item. And then a friend of mine, actually Itamar Simonsen at Stanford, had the idea, why not put two items in and then measure which item people prefer? So yes, by measuring stuff, what people do and what people don't do, you can learn a lot more about their preferences. But this, as I said, were the good olden days. The technology has changed, and more importantly, actually, people's expectations have changed. We are not willing to do what we used to be willing for doing. You know, for a couple of years, I've now said, we moved from e-business, where we go to Amazon and we say, this is the book review, to me business. Hey, I'm talking about the book in my blog, but why would I want actually Amazon to have this? I mean, I'm happy for them to syndicate it, but I'm not going to put it there and then push the button and say, thank you for computing. This content is now property of Amazon.com. So it's an e-business to me business, rather than having the company in the center, the site in the center, it's the person in the center right now. And then from me business, we move to we business. My British colleagues say it should be us business, but that doesn't work as well from the language. And the us business, the we business, means we look at the interactions between people. Widgets I already mentioned here. Ajax is another example of basically websites disappearing. Widgets can be smart. Just a few days ago, I had the new Flash loaded, and I was in some random site and say, do you mind if we actually turn your microphone and your camera on because we want to know what situation you are in order to show you the right ads? It didn't quite say it in those words, but they want to know whether they can access my camera and my microphone. How interesting. That's another way of measuring user engagement. For instance, is a user sitting in front of the computer or is the user getting a beer in the fridge? What about the microphone? Is the TV blasting in the background or is the guy actually really there or is he on the phone? So many other measures of engagement can be done here. In 1993, actually, when I was a consultant at Goldman Sachs, we talked about instrumenting the trading floor, putting microphones there, measuring how many phone lines are open as a measure of market volatility. Just again, data, data über alles, you know, just think about what else you can measure here. Now, I wanted to close here by talking about decentralization versus centralization. So we already have seen that sites like Amazon have to reinvent themselves, and Amazon does it extremely well through the web services, through compute power, storage, and so on and so forth, and have to deal with the decentralization, that stuff and clicks are distributed across the world, all the way across the web. And the analytics, which measure metrics only on one site, actually become less and less relevant because more and more takes place elsewhere. So I might have really great analytics, but only on that 1% of the clicks which actually happen on Amazon or on Twitter or whatever you're talking about. That is decentralization. On the other hand, I'm not sure who of you has an account at Facebook, for instance. Facebook is a beautiful aggregator for social media usage on one site. It's no longer that you go to a delicious website, but you put your delicious, of course, on Facebook. It's no longer that you use Twitter, but of course you have Twitter on Facebook, and so on and so forth. So that's interesting how those sites that have baked into them novelty, interestingness, like the feed where my friend's actions, who hooked up with whom last night, where my friend's actions are actually shown, that's where a lot of action now is in a centralized way. So to summarize here, there are a plethora of metrics of active engagement, both qualitative ones, think surveys, and quantitative ones. The goal really is, I think, to try to instrument not only your site, but to instrument the world. Last but not least, think about mobile, the convergence between mobile and your PC. It's, you know, almost doesn't make any difference for me anymore whether I read my email on my BlackBerry or whether I read my email on my PC. Intention was sort of Web 1.5. Google's 150, 200 billion market capitalization is due to the intention economy. You tell Google what you want and show you an ad in a very smart way with all the auctions. Attention is the game which we are playing right now. That's why I said what we want is we want to measure attention. This is what I want to tell you. We now turn over to Christian. And Christian, as I said, is the CEO of a company called NetTrek. Has nothing to do with trekking through the mountains. WebTrek. One letter wrong, okay. My attention wasn't introducing here. And I don't have your slide up. Did you send it as email or?
I sent it, but I can also.
Why don't you plug in your computer? And why don't I show it while you start talking, actually?
Okay. Thank you, Andreas. My name is Christian Sauer. I'm CEO and founder of WebTrek. We're a German web analytics company. And when you asked me like 2 days ago whether I wanted to be on the stage with you for 2.0 metrics, I thought, wow, most of our companies are bigger companies, so they're not like Web 2.0 companies, and they're not even Web 1.0 companies. They existed long before the internet, so what should I say? When we started about 12 months ago to talk to a lot of these younger companies and to see like in the beginning you said like how many page impressions you get, and they said like, well, we're right now 5 million, or we're planning 2 billion in 6 months. And what's your pricing model? So we said, well, it's based on page impressions. So they said, okay, we go to Google Analytics and everything's for free. Is that okay, I'll fix it. And so obviously we didn't really come together because we were just too expensive. So we started talking to them and seeing like, what's interesting for you as a company, and what are the differences between like all the existing sites there are, and what can we do about it? And we found out a lot of things. As you heard here, page impressions or page views are, that's what I just did. Page views are no longer important. So I don't have a presentation here because it was, but I have just one slide to show you later on. Page views are no longer important. News net ratings, they have new metrics. They change from page views to time spent. You may have heard that. A lot of people ask, what do they smoke? You know, I mean, time spent is like no metric that's really important. I mean, you probably all have spent a lot of time on sites that you didn't like, or where you were like searching for stuff and you were spending more and more time because you didn't find it, but you needed it so bad. So this metric isn't really helping us. But the question is, do we need all new metrics? Do we need unique visitors or something totally new? And I believe, well, unique visitors still apply. Andreas said, well, it's kind of difficult. 30% of Amazon visits are bounce visits, and then they just leave the site again, so it's like really low traffic quality. We believe you can take care of your own traffic quality, so it doesn't really matter if it's a Web 2.0 or Web 1.0 or whatever site. Unique visitors is still an important measure that you should take care of. Nevertheless, it's a lot more important that you have events or actions that you track. So it's not anymore the page view with the technologies you have here, Ajax and Flash and the widgets. No page view, but it's the actions you actually have to track. And even this measure it depends on the user interface. I mean, sometimes if it's a very good site, one click can actually bring you there and you don't have to click anymore and it's perfect. And sometimes you have to click 10 times to get like anything done, and this really doesn't help. So we think in the end, as we always say, and to every client, it becomes a lot more important that you first prepare to install the analytics. You know, that you really know what your metrics should be. What is your success of your site? You know, what do you need analytics for? So what do you want to measure? And this is a lot more. It becomes a lot more important with Web 2.0. There's also more.
By the way, that's a very important point. That if people don't know what they are going to be measured against, they don't know what to do. So I think working with companies and getting them to understand what are the does not so metrics they might be wanting to measure, and then just getting the trade-offs out on the table makes it so much easier down the road for people to actually do the right thing. Because if you don't make it explicit, going back to the example I gave before, one guy optimizing click-throughs and next guy optimizing page views, you realize that those guys actually optimize in opposite directions. So I think tooling, getting a good dashboard done, whatever you call it.
Exactly. Yeah. Right, we call it balanced scorecards. I mean, this is like a very old thing to do, but it's so much more important to have like, you have an analytics system, you can look at it every day, and there's like tons of data. We talked about that, or we heard that a lot. There's no scarcity anymore, you have abundance of data. So you need to know beforehand what you're looking at, and you need to know how you like put it up on your site, do a balanced scorecard, have like 8 metrics in there with like 1 scorecard measure, and just follow the scorecard measure, for example, or get it emailed to you. Then you don't have to look at it every day, then you don't have to log onto your system, and you have everything you need to do to look at. If we're looking like ahead, we are planning of tracking more of the engagement measures, as we heard. I mean, I think this is also interesting, and the, to me it's like more, even like on a higher level, the interest itself. For me, I personally think, Facebook is as successful because you can see what happened with your friends, you know? Like, you can see any new photo they put up on Facebook, any new friendships they made. I think that's the important thing of Facebook. So how can we measure this? I don't know, you know? We have to think about it. So every site has to really think about it and understand the behavior of their people better. And that's why I wanted to show you, we're trying to have analytics not as, to have it a little more like touchy, you know, all the heat maps and everything, or overlay views that you can just look at the site and get a very fast idea of what you're thinking of. Here we can see a heat map, and I have to thank Oliver Besser from MyToys that we can use it. It's a MyToys heat map. But this is like not a normal heat map. Here we have a comparison between segments. So here you can see on one hand, you have the buyers, you have everybody that did a transaction on this, and you have the people that rather didn't buy. So now you can understand, or each page can understand, the page owner can understand better what happens on our site. We can see here, okay, the basket on the top right is red, so there are obviously a lot more people click there that bought something. And for example, in search, this is blue. People didn't buy, you know? I mean, and I know MyToys, they had a lot of numbers, they had a lot of metrics before, but with this, all of a sudden, you better understand, okay, like, what's the difference between the segments? There's a segment that's very important to me, and I want to know where do they click here? And you see, okay, they click on Preisitz, which is like discount stuff, and they click on Cheesa, which is an underwear brand, but they don't click on Max, with, you know, just to get an idea, and you get this very fast with this. And we just, developed this, put it online like 6 weeks ago. And this is, for me, it's also like a development of analytics, and sorry, it's not a Web2.0 company, and I know they have sometimes problems with heat maps because everything's changing so fast, but I think this also helps to understand better what people think when they're on websites.
And I see that the price of babies, ladies and gentlemen, has dropped by 64%.
Exactly.
On that note, since the price of babies has dropped, Sam actually does something to push that information further down by having one of the most successful dating sites in the company. Sam, do you want to come up and just share with a couple of minutes your thoughts? And while he's doing this, we are going to ask you to prepare your questions and move to the microphones so you can help us a little bit of understanding what you actually are interested in. You could just use the microphone here.
Can you hear me? So Andreas asked me to speak about an hour ago, so I'm like, that's okay.
To probably say, you know, actually, I should say that this show was going to be together with Bill Tanzer, who told me about 2 days ago that he's going to come. So I'm very grateful to both of you, and I actually still have to prepare a keynote for tomorrow instead of Bill Tanzer. If anybody has any ideas what you would like me to talk about,
join him on the stage.
So my name is Sam Yagan, I'm the founder and CEO of I'm just going to hit on 2 points that you guys talked about and just try to give a couple of practical examples of how we actually use some of the things that we talked about. So the first is transaction versus engagement. Those are kind of different models of how Web 1.0 is from Web 2.0. And I think that is really, really commendable in itself in the online dating industry. So Match.com, Parship, Meetic, these are all very transactional sites. There is nothing to do on the sites other than browse a profile, send a message, and get that message back. That may seem like engagements, But I would argue that it's not. It's much more like an e-commerce site where you're just looking to execute a transaction and leave the site as rapidly as possible. So we said, well, how can we take, you know, what is Web 2.0 look like for gaming? And what we did is we really changed the model and said, let's get the users really engaged in a community around gaming. So when Andres and I first met a couple years ago, I think what intrigued us for what we were doing was we have 30,000 user-generated surveys on our site. The surveys range from the topic from you know, soccer or anything, football, I should say, American, to you know, to what Sesame Street character would you be, which movie star would you be, all kinds of political and sexual content. And these 30,000 tests have been taken 30 million times by members of our community and people who just visit the community and leave. So we've really taken the model of dating as a transaction to dating as an agent. And what we found is our churn rates, the rate at which people leave the system is about a third of that of match.com. So our average account length is 3 times longer. So these are people staying on. So in fact, we have a lot of people who stay with us, even though we're a dating site, people who come onto the site, find their boyfriend or girlfriend, and keep their profiles and their activity on the site, even while they're in a relationship. Because they found a lot of people who stay on the site other than they just explicit dating. The second thing I'll talk about very quickly is metrics. And when people ask me how many pages I have, I look at them like they're crazy. Because which would you rather know about me as a dating site? Would you rather know how many pages I have, or how many messages are sent among the users to one another in a given month? Well, clearly how many messages is much more relevant. Because I can tell you I have 2 million page views a day, 10 million page views a day. That doesn't give you any sense of how much activity is actually happening on the site. If you really want to know what's happening, you want to know how many searches are happening. How many messages are being sent from one user to another? How many photos are being uploaded? These are the questions that are really going to give you a sense for whether this is the site you want to join. It doesn't matter at all how many pages I have. And so that's a really, I think, you know, we've really taken that to heart in terms of, yeah, sure, I need to know my page number because it's important to my revenue. I need to know how many unique users I have. But a unique user who bounces is totally useless. A user who comes and uploads a bunch of pictures, does a bunch of searches, sends a bunch of messages. This is somebody who's super valuable to us. In fact, we've even, I don't think this is since I last met you, but we actually have a way to value each user on the site, a dollar value, based on their activity. So every time you send a message, every time you upload a picture, we accrue value to the community based on that activity, rather than based on their location. So I know we're running over time, so I'm going to go ahead and cut that short. But thank you for asking.
And let's open up for the audience here. What questions do you have about this super interesting topic about what does it mean to measure engagement? Let's open up the microphones. Jan?
No.
No.
Just
enjoy.
Yes, just enjoy.
Okay. Who wants to have any comments here? Yes, please.
Hello. I fully agree with you that it doesn't make very much sense to measure page views when you're interested in the users, and that sometimes leads to stupid websites, like for example in Germany, the Süddeutsche with its horrible image galleries of 60 separate pages. But there's a huge problem with there are formalized mechanisms of measuring advertising value. For example, in Germany, it's EVB. Are there any movements in this respect that in these companies that they tend to change their mechanisms and you know what?
Well, I can say there are some movements. As I said, at Nielsen, they change from page views to time spent, which doesn't really help. I mean, the changes then were, I think, that AOL came from 6 to 1 because they had some sort of widget that was on all the time, and Google fell from 2 to 5 because time spent on Google is obviously lower. So there are changes. I don't think there are changes with EVV because they still depend on page views. And I don't really have a clue, you know. To me, this would be advertising exposure. That would be an interesting measure for a site. But how to measure it is quite difficult, I have to say. So page views could be something close to it, But as far as I know, E4V, I mean, they're kind of slow usually anyways, didn't really change anything yet.
My view is that, as I said, the good old times, you know, page made sense. But pages really don't make sense anymore. And if you just look at a couple of announcements which just came out, and I mentioned it yesterday already in my talk, what Facebook is doing now, that Facebook adds the beacon for social distribution, the 12 landmark partners here, which you see down here, Saturn being one of them. I mean, that's just a different game. People don't go there because of transaction business. As Sam mentioned, I'm very, very happy that he made this point. People go there because of it, and it's not that they're paying for that or something. Nobody pays anybody here, actually. But it's really that people are interested in relationships. And those companies, which can provide some kind of reason for people to form relationships with a company or with each other, I think they're ultimately the ones who will stay in business. And if you think about this, the power of the social graph, that if you want to buy a camera and you ask your friends, hey, you know, that seems like a good camera there, where did you get it? Say, I wish I'd gotten the other one. That's much more powerful than even entering digital camera in the intention economy Google is so successful in running. So I think if you think that, you know, recommendations of the old guy are good, then wait what's happening, what the recommendations here are. Seven of your best 743 friends recently bought a Canon camera. It's much more powerful than if you just sort of see statistical averages over the rest of the world.
I would also just add that it's not one stat fits all. Back in Web 1.0, we all cared about the same thing. It was just who has the most page views, and that's all anyone cared about. And I think now we just have to accept the fact that not only are there multiple stats, metrics that matter for each site, but they're going to be different across the sites. The things I, you know, your example with Google and AOL is perfect. I mean, Google doesn't want you to spend a lot of time on the site, right? They want you to execute a lot of searches. And so comparing, you know, a metric for Google and a metric for Facebook, they're complete opposites. And the idea that I don't even think we should be searching for necessarily one metric to compare it to. We can just accept that they're both different. It's like a newspaper and a TV. They're just different.
And even if you think about dating sites or Amazon.com, well, is it good if people have many page views at Amazon, the dating site? Or is it bad?
People ask me all the time, wait, shouldn't people be leaving very rapidly? If your site is so good, they should find someone in a day and leave. So is it good that I have a longer, you know, less churn than Match, or is that really bad? Does that mean my site is bad? Right? So the same stat that I positioned up there as being great, someone could just say, well, that means you're three times, one third as good as Match.
And that's why I think I would like to close with saying, be creative. This is the day and age when you can instrument the world. And we didn't talk much about mobile. We didn't talk much about RFIDs, for instance. I work with Metro Group on RFID stuff. It is just an amazingly big world. And if you want to talk about metrics of Web 2.0, just think about metrics of World 2.0. And on that note, I would like to thank the audience, and I would like to thank Sam and Christian for joining me here. Thank you, have a good evening.